Okay. The next argued case is number 181550, Hologic Incorporated against Minerva Surgical Incorporated. Mr. Wolf.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Matthew Wolf for Hologic. In essentially every instance where petitioner and patent owner disagreed, the PTAB resolved that dispute by turning to Dr. Pierce. For example, on the core issue of motivation to combine, this is at Appendix 42, quote, petitioner's reason is supported by the testimony of Dr. Pierce. We thus determine that petitioner provides a sufficient rationale to combine the references. The problem is Dr. Pierce had no experience whatsoever, either actual or academic, in the field of uterine ablation. He didn't have any experience in uterine medical devices, in uterine perforations, in uterine fluid flow, in the risks of distending the uterus, in the risks caused by intravasation, and perhaps most importantly, did not know what the preferences of physicians were at the relevant time in 1999 for what would and would not motivate them to look for a new or different procedure.
Didn't the board determine the level of ordinary skill in the art on the basis of the title of the patent and the specification? In other words, that this dealt with ablation of body cavities as opposed to just a uterine.
It did, Your Honor, and that was plain error for multiple reasons. First of all, if we start with the statute, Section 103 says that a claim is obvious to if it's obvious to one of skill in the art, quote, to which the claimed invention pertains. So we have some broader references in the specification to additional applications, but the claims at issue here were all indisputably limited to uterine procedures. And so Section 103 tells us we got to look to the claims first. And the claims are about uterine procedures, something that Dr. Pierce had no experience on. Now, even despite knowing that he had no such experience, Dr. Pierce himself said, and this is at A754, the 183 patent is generally directed to methods of detecting perforations in a uterus. And then he went on in defining what a person of skill in the art is after giving the first part of the definition, the one the PTAB adopted, to say, quote, Aposa would have been familiar with known techniques for uterine surgery. He wasn't so familiar. He himself said, Minerva itself said, this is part of the definition of a person of skill, and the PTAB simply disregarded it. So if you start from the perspective of the claims, obviously in read in light of the spec, but you start from the claims, which are about uterine surgery, and then go to a person that has no experience in uterine surgery of any kind. This wasn't a situation where he was lacking experience and then went and read up on it. He didn't know. And at his deposition, he said, I didn't do anything to prepare for this quiz. And so what basis did the PTAB have to rely on him over Dr. Martin and Dr. Eventash, who were replete with experience in the relevant art? Now, I said essentially every instance, and the reason I said essentially every instance, not everyone, is this gets even more complicated with regard to Claim 7. Claim 7 says not only do you do this procedure, but first, before you start the ablation, first you test for a perforation with a pressure sensor. You do that first. The only person that spoke to that was Dr. Mirabli, their other expert for Minerva. The problem with Dr. Mirabli is he didn't review at all the references at issue in the IPR. Not at all. And what did the PTAB do with his testimony? They said they accepted as to Claim 7 that you would have lengthened the procedure. And this is important. The PTAB acknowledged, and this is at A33, that for Claim 7 purposes, you're not substituting a part of one reference into another. You're actually combining them, basically turning one procedure into two. They use the word, it's not a substitution, but a supplementation. The PTAB said, we're okay with that. We're okay lengthening the procedure, notwithstanding everything Dr. Martin and Dr. Eventash said about the risks that presents to a patient, because, quote, Dr. Mirabli gladly would have extended the duration of the procedure if the ultimate result was a safer treatment. Well, what procedure are they even talking about? Dr. Mirabli didn't review the procedures, the Masterson or the Isaacson procedure, that were before the PTAB. He was instead, his declaration only talks about something called ThermoChoice, which was not a reference before the PTAB and was very different than the procedures before the PTAB because it involved fluid in a balloon. And if you contain fluid in a balloon, by definition, you're not worried about the fluid in the other procedures that were put directly into the uterus leaking through ruptures or otherwise, or perforations, as the claim talks about. So he says, I know about this procedure called ThermoChoice, and I don't worry about lengthening ThermoChoice. There's no risk here. And the PTAB, for some reason, then applies that to Masterson and Isaacson, the two lead references, and says, well, there's no problem with lengthening the procedure, but those are different procedures. So at the end of the day, we have Dr. Pierce, who has no experience in uterine arts, opining about the uterine references. And on the other hand, we have Dr. Mirabli, who didn't review the references, does have experience in the art, but doesn't review the references, and the PTAB combines them. Put simply, there was no expert with knowledge of the problem play that said, I have looked at Masterson and Isaacson, and I can tell you a person of skill in art would have been motivated to combine. Next issue that I'd like to raise is about the substitute claims. And focusing, for example, on 18 and 22, the substitute claims essentially took what were the original claims and added mechanical features disclosed in the specification or talked about specific features of the ablation device. Features that were not present in the lead references, Masterson or Isaacson. They were present, though, in Trukai, which was a related application. And the PTAB said, well, we can just combine those with literally no analysis of motivation to combine. Literally none. There is no discussion of why one would have taken Trukai, a totally different approach to ablation, and combined it with either Masterson or Isaacson when Masterson and Isaacson worked just fine. I mean, I think the kinetic concepts case is particularly trenchant here when it said, because each device independently operates effectively, a person having ordinary skill in the art who was merely seeking to create a better device to drain fluids from a wound would have no reason to combine the features of both devices into a single device. Here we have Masterson that works fine on its own, doesn't indicate that it has any problems. Similar Isaacson, they're very similar devices. Then we have Trukai, which is off here, also works well on its own. Why would these three things be combined? In order to suggest why three perfectly fine working devices would be combined, you would expect one of skill in the art to say there was something missing, there was some motivation. But that is entirely absent from the final written decision. There is zero discussion of it. With that, unless there are questions, I'd like to turn to the claim construction issue at play here.
Please do.
The claim construction language is monitoring for the presence of a perforation with a pressure sensor. That's what the procedure must do. It must monitor for the presence of a perforation with a pressure sensor. It can, of course, do other things as well. No one is suggesting, we're not suggesting that if a prior art reference did that but also monitored for something else with a pressure sensor, that that would make it not invalidating. But you must at least monitor for the presence of a perforation in the uterus with a pressure sensor for this to be relevant. For some reason, the PTAB disagreed. They said, and this is at 27 of the opinion, Appendix 27, that it may also be caused by perforation, but may alternatively be caused by malfunctions. So what they're saying is, and this is kind of hard to follow because it's a claim construction decision, but it's not actually put in the claim construction section of the final written decision. They actually move it into the body and then say that our arguments are rejected because broadest reasonable interpretation is much broader than what we suggest. But we have the prior art references that Masterson and Isaacson that monitor for things other than perforations with a pressure detector, with a pressure sensor, particularly mechanical failure. That's really what we're talking about here. For example, kink tubes is one of the specific examples given. The pressure sensors, they are monitored for things other than perforations. And the panel says, well, that's, or the PTAB said, that's good enough because the claim construction should be broader. But how can it be the case that language that calls for monitoring for the presence of a perforation is satisfied if you're not monitoring for the presence of a perforation? And if you look at A2329, for example, Dr. Pierce, despite not being an expert, agreed, for example, that Isaacson cannot measure pressure drops due to perforation. So the panel found that Isaacson satisfied this claim limitation because it could monitor for kinks and hoses when that's not what the claim is talking about. That's not what the claim language is referencing. I want to conclude, I have just a minute or so before my rebuttal, by talking about what Dr. Pierce opined on, notwithstanding the fact that he had no expertise. He opined about what was conventional in the uterine arch. That's at 754-6. What Masterson and Isaacson taught to a person of skill in the art. That's at 777 and 817. The motivation for combining these references to one in skill in the uterine arts. That's 773 or 810, etc. He actually uses phrases like, one with skill, one who knew what was going on in the uterine field would understand that, when he was not someone that would understand that. Last point I would make is just about Masterson and Isaacson specifically on the merits. Both of these devices maintain constant pressure. That's the whole idea. In fact, if you look at Masterson, this is at 1071, column 14, lines 34 to 37. It says pressure will be constant. That's the whole idea of the device. You maintain both devices, Masterson and Isaacson. You maintain a column of fluid that keeps pressure so that the fluid pressure in the uterus is constant. That's the whole purpose of the device. Masterson tells you it cannot be used to detect for perforations. It cannot be used for this purpose. Isaacson doesn't explicitly say that, but it's the same mechanical principle, so how could it? With that, how could it be said that that device would be used, as the PTAB suggested, to monitor for perforations? With that, I see I'm in my rebuttal time, and thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Rosato.
Thank you, Judge Newman. May it please the Court. I'd like to start by first noting a correction to an issue that was raised first in the reply brief, and it's just a comment that along the lines that the district court had made some findings and an argument that confirming the board's decision here would somehow be in contrast or contradict that. That's not true. Prior art invalidity has not been litigated at district court. The PTAB is the only form in which that issue was litigated, so there is no instance of inconsistency here, and just wanted to clarify that point of the record. Beyond that, with the argument we heard from my friend from Hologic, I would say as a general matter, much of the argument seems to reflect arguments that don't match what happened in this case at all, and there are a number of instances that are just, you know, flatly incorrect statements or representations of the record. And I would start with the issue of the board's reliance on Dr. Pierce's testimony. There's actually not a single instance or a single issue here in dispute where the board relied only on Dr. Pierce's testimony. For each of the disputed issues, the board is relying on numerous pieces of evidence, including the prior art references themselves, content of those references, as well as testimony from Hologic's witnesses as well. You won't find a single instance of a disputed issue here where the board solely relied on Dr. Pierce's testimony. It's also incorrect to characterize Dr. Pierce as having no experience in uterine ablation, and I would direct the court's attention to page 51, A51, of the decision where the board made factual findings to this effect, noting in the context of denying Hologic's motion to exclude Dr. Pierce's testimony that Dr. Pierce has extensive knowledge relating to electrosurgical ablation device and knowledge of endometrial ablation devices as well.
But so that's not to say that he has experience or knowledge in the uterine area, correct?
No, the finding was that he does have knowledge of endometrial.
What's that citation?
A51, Your Honor. And again, this was in the context of denying their motion to exclude an issue that has not been brought up on appeal here. I'll give you a moment to find that. But at the end of the day, the other thing to point out is that there's not a single instance in this case where the substance of Dr. Pierce's testimony has been shown to lack credibility.
What's that citation again?
A51, Your Honor.
A51.
It's page 51 of the board's final written decision, where the board's talking about why they're denying Hologic's motion to exclude Dr. Pierce's testimony as unfounded. It's right in the middle of the page.
Please continue.
And this, of course, makes sense, as Dr. Pierce is a professor of bioengineering. He's a renowned expert in electrosurgical devices. He literally wrote the textbook on electrosurgical devices, which covers uterine ablation technologies, and he described during cross-examination some experience actually working and consulting on uterine ablation projects. So this is an unfounded argument. But at the end of the day, what we ask is the substance of a witness's testimony credible and corroborated by the evidence? In every single instance, it is, and there has not been a single instance identified where anything Dr. Pierce had to say lacked credibility, because there is no such instance. This is a sideshow issue. Now, the other thing I would say is one of the problems here with this appeal is that Hologic largely avoids the board's factual findings on the two key core issues that were litigated in front of the Patent Office. The first is on the content of the primary prior art references of Masterson and Isaacson, and that is particularly on the issue of whether those references disclose monitoring for a perforation using a pressure sensor, the alleged invention in this case. And for both of those references, the board made detailed findings of fact corroborated with various pieces of evidence that both of those references did in fact disclose that aspect. Again, the invention that's being claimed. There's no showing that any of that evidence fails to qualify as substantial evidence. And again, there are multiple sources of evidence there to support those key factual findings. The second core argument...
Most of the prior art seems to be directed towards detecting decreases in pressure for purposes or reasons other than perforations. What is that?
I would say that's not accurate, Your Honor. Okay. So both the...
Point me to a prior to one of the prior art references that deals with decrease in pressure due to a perforation.
Okay. Well, there's the Isaacson reference, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. And that is the primary reference in the... there's two grounds of challenge, one based on the Masterson reference, one based on the Isaacson reference. And in the final written decision, the board goes through and explains and makes detailed findings of fact precisely why the Isaacson reference is monitoring for uterine perforation using pressure sensor. Okay, and that is, let me find you there. This is on explained on pages 39 through 41, A39 through A41 of the final written decision.
Well, I'm looking at the blue brief, and on page 19 it says, Isaacson does not disclose monitoring for the presence of perforation using a pressure sensor. Is that statement correct?
No. And the board made findings of fact that that's not correct. And on page 41, in multiple places, page 40, the board states, Isaacson teaches using the pressure transducers to monitor for the presence of a perforation in the uterus. Again, on page 41, the board concludes, Isaacson indicates that uterine perforation can be detected from changes in flow rate, which can be measured using pressure. And the board goes through and makes a very detailed analysis of the content of the Isaacson reference, explains how that reference is expressly stating that they're monitoring for perforations, they're doing it based on a calculation of flow differential, and the board explains that their flow measurements are made using pressure sensors. And then the board concludes Therefore, Isaacson teaches monitoring for a uterine perforation using pressure sensors.
Where is the board's suggestion of combining these references?
It comes in two places. So again, let's look at what's being offered and what's being combined, so to say. We're looking at the combined teachings of references. So in each instance, the board's making factual findings that the primary references themselves teach this key limitation. The secondary references are confirming that interpretation. That's true in the context of the Masterson reference, where Masterson specifically mentions using pressure sensors to detect an under-pressure situation in the uterus and then alarming the physician of such an instance. The question is, would an under-pressure situation include a uterine perforation? And the board interpreted that reference and said, yes, in fact, it would. And they had multiple reasons for coming to that conclusion. One is looking at the secondary reference of Balduc, which was the combination here, where the Balduc reference is specifically measuring for perforations using a pressure sensor. So it's looking at the combined teachings there. They went through Dr. Pierce's testimony that confirmed, Hologic's expert Dr. Martin's testimony that confirmed that such an under-pressure situation would be a uterine perforation. There are multiple pieces of evidence to support this. Again, a key factual findings where you won't see in the blue brief some analysis as to why those factual findings lack substantial evidence. They don't lack substantial evidence, and there's no showing that they do. Same type of analysis when we get to Isaacson. Walk through, and the board makes detailed factual findings why that reference is monitoring for perforation using a pressure sensor, and then looking at various pieces of evidence that confirm that. As far as the safety rationale, which Hologic focuses on in terms of a lacking rationale, there's no mystery there as to what argument the board was crediting and why they were crediting it. This can be found at both A25 and A27 of the record, pages 25 through 27 of the board's final written decision, where the board expressly states as to the safety rationale, they're specifically crediting the argument that was advanced in the petition materials that this perforations, holes in the uterus during this ablative procedure where we recognize safety risk because, as admitted in the blue brief, this is actually on page 7 of the blue brief, it's acknowledged that this is a recognized risk in the field. The board credits the argument and states at page 27 exactly why they are crediting that argument. They say Minerva's argument is specifically corroborated by the prior art references, and they point to multiple prior art references, including the Masterson reference, which specifically states that they're using a under-pressure alarm detection monitoring for the purposes of, and I'm quoting, increased safety to the patient. So the board's looking at an argument that's presented, saying it's credited, and then saying exactly why it's credited. It's an argument that's expressly corroborated with the prior art references. That's as good as a rationale gets. And that's explained, and it's certainly reviewable, which was the issue that was raised. Unless there are any questions about the rationale, I'll turn briefly to the claim construction issue. And as explained in the response brief, this is less about a claim construction issue, and really it has to be taken in context of the argument that was being advanced of what the board was stating. The board, when it makes a secondary paragraph about the scope of the claims.
Was there ever any actual dispute over the phrase monitoring for the presence of a perforation in the uterus using a pressure sensor?
No, nobody proposed, Hologic never proposed some construction of that which would have excluded the prior art. What they were arguing, they're essentially trying to read, this really came back to the arguments about the content of the prior art references. Hologic was trying to advance an argument that the primary references must be limited only to certain types of causes of under-pressure situations. And the board went through and evaluated the evidence on that issue and said that just doesn't make sense. The language of the claim is monitoring for a perforation using a pressure sensor. The language is not monitoring only for a perforation using a pressure sensor. And that was important in view of how this is described in not only the 183 patent, but in all of the prior art references. Perforation detection based on pressure is described as measuring with a pressure sensor the detection of an under-pressure situation. Once that's detected, an alarm goes off to the user, and they're instructed to investigate the cause of that, whether it's some equipment malfunction or a perforation. That is exactly how it's described in the 183 patent, where it repeatedly references an under-pressure situation as a possible perforation and indicates that the physician should be alerted to investigate the situation. That's how it's described in the other prior references, and that is how it's described in the ThermoChoice product literature, an admitted prior art system that existed at the time. That system is describes the process as running a pressure check. If a pressure problem is detected, the manual instructs the user to inspect the equipment, rule out an equipment malfunction. If they can't rule out an equipment malfunction, inspect the uterine cavity for a perforation. So what the board was saying is, you're arguing, in trying to argue that a limitation into the prior art, you seem to be ignoring what your claim requires and how this process is described in your own specification. So it's more of about an issue of the content of the prior art references, less about a claim construction per se. This is briefed. I do want to address one issue, if I may, before. And that is this, I mentioned there were two issues that were really, core to the board's decisions and key arguments in the case. The second was this argument about there'd be no rationale for obviousness on the basis of the alleged conventional wisdom or state of the art at the time. This is a core argument that Hologic advanced before the board, and the board explained in its final written decision exactly why it had rejected this argument. There's no ambiguity here. The board made specific findings of fact of multiple evidence and found, quote, patent owner misrepresents the conventional wisdom or state of the art, end quote. Hologic tried to advance a false narrative in their non-obviousness arguments before the board, and the board called them out on it. And there's really no way for me to sugarcoat that. And that's, you can see that, the quote I mentioned, by the way, is A31 of the record, and there are detailed findings and explanations by the board on that point.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Rosado? Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosado.
Thank you. I'd like to begin, Judge Reyna, with your question about whether Dr. Pierce had any experience. This is the quote, this is the underlying site that the board relied on. What personal, this is at Appendix 2246, page 24. What personal experience do you have that would lead you to know how a uterus was conventionally distended in November 1999? Well, that's what the VESPA system did. Is the VESPA system discussed or mentioned at all in your CV? It is not, sir. And I think you told me earlier this morning that you didn't rely on your one-day experience with the VESPA system informing any of your opinions in this case, right? I didn't rely upon it. Yes, you're correct. So the PTAB says Dr. Pierce is experienced in this when Dr. Pierce himself says, I have one-day experience and I didn't even rely on it. This is the kind of substantial evidence question we're facing. Similarly, counsel, my friend just said he didn't want to sugarcoat our supposed misrepresentation about the state of the art. Remember, the state of the art was offered not by Dr. Pierce, but by Dr. Mirabile. Dr. Mirabile, who never reviewed the art in question. So when they said, well, the conventional wisdom was wrong, we misrepresented it, he was talking about this ThermoChoice device that has nothing to do with the IPR. He was not reviewing at all the actual references at issue in this case. I want to talk secondly about this notion that the evidence was replete. It wasn't just Dr. Pierce, but I would ask you to look at Appendix 41 and 42, where they're explaining, the PTAB is explaining why they found a motivation to combine. They say, third, patent owner argues that petitioner fails to provide a sufficient rationale to combine Masterson and Bolduc. He then says, the PTAB then cites two sentences referencing petitioner's reasoning, not evidence. No evidence. The only evidence then they cite is Dr. Pierce. So we have on the one hand Dr. Evan Tash and Dr. Martin who say, and let's focus just on Claim 7 for the moment. If nothing else, Your Honors, I ask you to look at Claim 7. Where it was unambiguous, the PTAB said, this would lengthen the procedure. This would be stacking one reference on top of another. It would unambiguously lengthen the procedure. Dr. Martin and Dr. Evan Tash said, you wouldn't want to do that. That would have been contrary to the state of the art at the time. Everything would push you against that. The only response to that was Dr. Pierce, who acknowledged he had no experience. He didn't know what folks wanted to do at the time. There is no substantial evidence. Even the site, we were led to page 40, where, Your Honor, you asked about what Isaacson taught, and I would note that it's unambiguous that Masterson and Isaacson don't talk about pressure. They talk about flow rate. For Isaacson, that's at A1091, page 14, 4 to 10. Look at the site the PTAB uses. Isaacson teaches using the pressure transducers to monitor for the presence of a perforation in the uterus. See testimony of Dr. Pierce, someone who admitted he had no experience at the time. He had no experience at any time. He didn't try to develop that experience for purpose of the IPR. Once you pull Dr. Pierce's testimony out or give it the proper weight, the whole house of cards collapses. Not only is there not substantial evidence, there is quite literally no evidence in support of the PTAB's conclusion, and particularly as to Claim 7, where there is not a single individual in this case who said, I've looked at the prior art and I find that there's a motivation to combine as to Claim 7. Because Dr. Mirabli didn't look at the prior art of record, and Dr. Pierce didn't look at the issue of the stacking. So with that, I'd like to turn just to the final point on the claim construction issue. If you accept the fact that you must at least, not exclusively, but at least have a pressure sensor monitoring for uterine perforation, then there is no evidence that Masterson or Isaacson does that. If you accept, at a minimum, we should be remanded for a proper claim construction where they say that, yes, you can do other things, but you must at least do what the claim says. That's why there was no claim construction dispute below, because the plain meaning is the plain meaning. The board, sua sponte, said, we'll add these alternatives. Instead of monitoring for perforation, you can monitor for kinks in the hoses or catastrophic mechanical failure.
Well, the board cites Isaacson, and it says, and I'm not going to read the whole quote. I'm looking at page 40 towards the end of that paragraph. It says that Isaacson states that by monitoring the volume and flow rate of the fluid discharged from the uterus, then it goes on and says, the possibility of uterine perforation can be detected by these means.
So what Isaacson does is it basically, it measures, it says, it, Isaacson does test for perforations because it has that column of fluid.
It does or does not?
It tests for perforations, but not with pressure. It uses an entirely different, perfectly adequate means. It does it with flow rate. That's the whole point. And the only connection between flow rate and pressure sensing, which is our invention, we say we don't want to use flow rate. We know Isaacson uses flow rate.
The board made a factual finding that the possibility of uterine perforation can be detected by these means, and it's speaking about Isaacson.
But it's... As I said, Isaacson itself says flow rate. The connection the board makes is based on Dr. Pierce saying that flow rate and pressure are one and the same thing. If you look at, again, 1091, page 14, 4 to 10, you will see that Isaacson is talking about flow rate, not pressure. And the board made that contrary distinction because, and it's right there on the fourth line from the bottom, see Exhibit 1002, paragraph 162, testimony of Dr. Pierce. It was Dr. Pierce, not Isaacson, that said flow rate is tantamount to pressure. With that, Your Honor, I'm not sure if there's any other questions, but as I said, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.